is April the 26th, 2010, and my name is Ethel Orbenick, and I'm a member of the BC History of Nursing Society. And today I'm interviewing Agnes, and you're commonly known as Nan Martin, so we'll call you Nan for the interview. I'm interviewing Nan in her home in Vancouver. And it's a real pleasure, Nan, to be able to interview you today. Nan is on our executive of the BC History of Nursing Society. And she's had a really interesting career, mainly in the area of gerontology. And also she was very active in the gerontological nurses group. But I thought we could start today, Nan, by talking just a little bit about where you were born. You were born in Scotland, I know, and you took your nursing there as well. So perhaps we could start there, and you could just tell us a little bit about your childhood.
A little bit about my childhood. Yes, I was born in Scotland, in Edinburgh, but was brought up in Glasgow because my father was killed during the war. And my mother moved back to Glasgow to live with my grandmother, and I was only four when my father was killed, so my mother had three children to bring up. I had a very good childhood, I felt. Happy. We were poor, but loved, my mother had five brothers who were our uncles, and one especially was like a father to me. So I went to school in Glasgow, and then when I was thinking of leaving school, I left at 15 instead of staying on to take my hires, as one called it then.
Hires would be?
Like up to age 18 here, would be like staying at school till you were 18.
Yes.
You could leave at 15 in Scotland at that time. The headmaster wanted me to stay on because he felt I had some potential to go to university, but I at that time didn't want to do that, and so I had a friend who was going into a nursing college, and so I thought that sounded fun. She's going in there and she gets this little nurse's uniform to wear, and I thought that was sounded like fun. However, probably I was meant to do that rather than my dreams of being an administrative secretary.
That was one thing I had thought to do.
Yeah. Because in my childhood I always was helpful to people. That was just something in me that was there, and so I did like to help. And in fact, I used to help with my sister when she was ill, being kind of the nurse. So maybe there was something inside. So it was meant to be. Went to pre-nursing college, then I completed my nursing training.
What was a pre-nursing college?
It was as if one stayed on at school, mm-hmm. Because you continued with the basic English, etc. However, you concentrated on like physiology, anatomy, mm-hmm. Just the beginning basics of the sciences, etc. in nursing. And so there was a two-year program. And I completed that two-year program and then went into Glasgow Royal Infirmary as a probationary nurse. And the training there, and we called it training in those days, was 3 years. And I completed that.
So actually it was a five-year course.
So in a way it was a five-year course.
Yes.
Yes, in a way it was a five-year course, yes. So I completed that.
Now, let's just ask a question. Were there any other nurses in your family?
No.
You're the only one?
I was the only one.
Yes,
and when I think about it, I really didn't think about that. No, I was the only one.
Yes.
And in a little group of friends that I developed throughout my nursing training, there were six of us who were very close. And of the six, I was the one who said I would never marry a doctor. Well, I was the only one who ended up marrying a doctor. Unfortunately, we were married for 20 years, but it ended in divorce, unfortunately. But I'm still in touch with him, and he's still fine, and he's still working.
He's not
in Scotland. No. We both came to Canada with the family, yes. No, he's over on the island, in fact, and mm-hmm. has a nice wife, and mm-hmm. we keep in touch. And mm-hmm. It's really nice. It never affected. It did affect the children, obviously, but not to a bad extent.
Yeah.
Yes, they keep in touch with both of us, and we get together even on family occasions. So. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was just a little aside.
Right.
You can edit this, can't you?
We can edit the tape recordings so easily. You know,
all right.
We have all kinds of things on here. Which, well, it's we're human. We have stories.
Right.
And actually, we used to say that the students should always have their eyes out for the interns.
That's right.
So we all knew that.
That's right.
And so was the reason why you chose the gospel, you know, so infirmary, or was it because it was close to where you were living?
Well, I was brought up in Glasgow, and that was one of the major hospitals there. I'm not absolutely sure. I can't think of actually why it was Glasgow Royal Infirmary that I chose out of the other hospitals.
Yes.
It was perhaps more central and easily accessed from my home. Although we all stayed in the nurse's home for that, well, at least for the first 2 years, we stayed in the nurse's home. So I chose it, and it's a well-recognized hospital. Yes, several medical specialists came from there. So.
So, and then you, after that, did you take a midwifery course as well?
I did.
Yes.
That was the general idea, was to take a year's midwifery following one's general training. So I took 6 months, the first part midwifery, and I went down to London because that uncle that I mentioned, who was very special to me, lived in London. And so I went down to London to Hammersmith Hospital. And I did my first 6 months midwifery there. And I really enjoyed it. But instead of doing the 6 months in the, we would then go out into the district, I married my doctor. And so, and then, yes.
That was the end of
that course. That was the end of that. Yes, and of course the intent was to stay home, not to be working, and to have a family, and that's what we did, really.
Yeah.
He was the last, my husband was the last of the draft for the forces. We had a draft system in Britain where young men were called up for 2 years and they had to go unless they had a really good excuse. And it finished after my husband, but he had to do his years. So he chose to go to Canada in the Air Force. And he was became a doctor in the Air Force in Canada, the Canadian Air Force. And we lived in Camp Borden, which is north of Toronto, for 2 years.
Yeah.
So that was an experience, and we had hoped to travel all over Canada, but we stayed in that same place all the time. He wasn't moved. And so in Canada, I was at home. We were hoping to have a family, but I lost my first child full term, unfortunately, with the cord around the neck.
Oh.
And that was in Canada. And then I was diagnosed with tuberculosis of the kidney.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
In Glasgow, lots of children had TB.
Yeah.
And I had, when I was nine, in fact, I was diagnosed with it. But in those days, you just stayed home and you got fresh air. Mm-hmm. My mother, even though she hadn't much money, took us away for 2 months in the country so that I would be better.
Mm-hmm.
I was not treated with any medications. And so it obviously sort of healed itself. Mm-hmm. And but when I came, that was when I was nine. And renal TB develops 15 years later. And exactly 15 years later, I was diagnosed with it. And I was in Toronto General Hospital. And so my mother always thought Canada wasn't so good to me because I lost a baby and I had renal TB. We went back to Scotland and I had surgeries to, I won't go into the details of those, but I did lose my kidney and bladder enlargement. And I've been excellent since then.
Yes, so that basically cleared it.
That cleared it. Yeah. And I was on, of course, I was on streptomycin and medications.
Yeah.
For 2 years, and so they were concerned that I maybe shouldn't have any more children because I'd had this huge bladder operation because the renal stuff affected it. Anyway, we ended up having three healthy children.
And you were fine.
And I was fine.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we decided my husband was doing anesthesiology, but in Scotland it was very hard to get on unless you knew someone and he'd studied and exams and things, and it was a little bit of the old boys club, mm-hmm. and he wanted another opportunity, and we came to Canada.
So that's why you came.
So we came to British Columbia.
Ah, yes.
So we came to Trail.
Trail was an interesting place to end up.
Well, we came to Trail, and there's a big clinic in Trail.
Yes,
yes, and my husband was just part of the partnership there in Trail, and then I in fact took my had to take a pediatric course, a refresher course, to get sort of back into nursing. I decided I might like to try nursing again, and so I did that to got my registration.
Yes, there was a point where some of the British nurses didn't have a pediatric course.
That's
as
right.
part of their training.
That's right.
And had to take it here in order to qualify,
that's
right? And that was one of
that's
the
what I had
yeah.
to do.
Yeah.
Yes. Luckily, I didn't have to take the whole exam as
yeah.
they do now. I think they do that now. We have to more or less take a...
Was there specific exams, I think, at that
oh,
point?
Oh, yeah, yes, there were yeah. specific. Whatever you had missed out
right.
on
yeah.
your training, because
yeah.
I got all the information from
mm-hmm.
Glasgow Royal.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I did the pediatrics,
yeah.
and I had that, and I worked in Trail Hospital for a very short time. But then the clinic kind of dissolved, and we moved... to Delta,
yeah.
Where my husband worked in Surrey Memorial
mm-hmm.
Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I remained at home looking after the children.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately I divorced about 20
yeah.
years later, and I had been interested in accounting, you know, that administrative secretary
yeah.
stuff. So I started taking a CGA course and did the first couple of years. And then because I needed to find some work to maintain myself, etc., I decided I'd go back to nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And also because working in an office is different than working with people
yeah.
as a nurse. It's quite different.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my refresher course.
And where did you take that?
At BCIT mm-hmm. in 1968.
Yeah.
68, was it? Oh. 78.
Okay.
The years.
Okay.
Of course, yeah, 78. But I didn't immediately go back to work, but because I did some office work
mm-hmm.
after that, I wasn't sure. And then I decided I'd go back. At that time, and that was about 1980, I was told that the best place for me was to work with old people because they couldn't really harm them so much. I'd been out of nursing so long.
I was going to ask you why you chose
yeah,
anthropology
yeah.
because, you know, it was a question I had, yeah.
Well,
have I told you that? Remember?
I can't remember. I couldn't just put an actual person. I wouldn't like to put them on the line. But generally, it was felt in our course that even though we went to Mount St. Joseph in acute care, and the nurses on the ward said I should come and work there,
mm-hmm.
It seemed to be implied that maybe you better to start off in gerontology because it's easier. Because it's not so, you know, acute and all the rest
mm-hmm.
of it, and you've been out of it for a while.
Yeah.
But that must have sparked something in me because, anyway, I did apply to an intermediate care facility in Coquitlam, worked there for a little while, and then went to Shaughnessy
yeah.
Extended Care.
Yeah.
At the Jean Matheson Pavilion.
Yeah, that's very special.
And I was there for about a year and became interested at that time in promoting the, what would you say, the essence of gerontological nursing, promoting and trying to change the image of being a second class nurse because she worked in gerontology.
You found that was
I found that that was a prevalent opinion in those years.
Yes.
Second class.
Yeah.
That you couldn't hack it in acute care, so you go to gerontology. And that really upset me because I recognized that gerontology is one of the major it's just so complex, and it shouldn't be. It's different from high technology, but it's still very complex, and you have to have certain skills and definitely certain learning to work in it. So that was a start in my head, and at that time, the gerontological nurses group had been functioning since really about 83, just beginnings in Victoria and Vancouver. And I went along to some of the meetings, and it was almost going to fold in 1986 because they just didn't have the numbers coming, and CNA and the Canadian Gerontological Nursing Association was just developing as well. So it was the beginnings of gerontological nursing coming into the forefront. In fact, now there's certification for gerontological nursing. So the little BC group was beginning to fold, and I said it can't happen, and so I took over as president, and we had our first conference out at UBC, and it just grew from there.
That's wonderful.
Yes. It just grew from there.
Had been for you, maybe it would have folded.
It may well have.
Because it needed somebody.
It needed somebody. They could not get anybody to get it going.
Yeah.
And I think there was something in me that wanted to keep it going, and we kept it going.
Yes.
And so it's grown, it's still going. I'm pleased to say it's all part of the Canadian group. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I would say that my mentor probably was Jesse Mantle.
Yes.
Jesse Mantle, because I felt I hadn't, I needed more information, more and more learning. And she had a knowledge network. Had Jesse Mantle giving sort of lectures. Mm-hmm. One could actually have been doing a course at Victoria, and Jesse Mantle was giving lectures, and she did it on television, Knowledge Network.
Yes.
And I used to sit and watch it.
Yes. Yes.
And she really encouraged me to keep going and study.
Did
you do that?
Yeah. I remember that era.
Yeah.
It was quite new. Yeah. Yeah. She was. She came to UBC a couple of times.
Yes.
Remarkable.
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
So that encouraged me, and I being involved in the BC Gerontological Nurses Group, I also made contact with the Canadian Gerontological Nurses, and I was, although I don't have my name on the charter, just by one of those flukes of being a month late, I was missed.
Oh.
It doesn't matter. No, it was partly my fault, but I was missed. Anyway, I don't have my name on the charter for the Canadian Gerontological Nurses Association, but they became developed anyway, and it has grown stronger all the time as being a spokesperson for geriatrics, older people in all fields, not just in hospital, all fields, and connected also with CNA, and I went to the CNA meetings, and so it's quite involved in that, and growing in our group.
Must have been very satisfying for you to see
It was very satisfying.
Yeah.
And after Shaughnessy...
what were the conditions like there when you first went to Shaughnessy as far as the care? Do you have any recollections about things or things that you wanted to change perhaps or did change?
Yes. It was veterans, of course, at Shaughnessy. It was mainly male residents, a few female residents, and we had a lot of the older orderlies who had worked in the military hospital, and sometimes their handling of the veterans was rather, well, could have been improved, let's say, in that they cared for them, but they would, turning a patient, or they would just lift up arm and leg and...
They were a bit rough, really?
Rough, yeah. But it was hard work, mm-hmm. and very hard work in extended care. Mm-hmm. But I found most of them really did care. Mm-hmm. The nurses cared. We very specially cared. We would give up our time, and other nurses too, to have a little Christmas party and things mm-hmm. like that with the residents. Mm-hmm. And I found them very caring.
Mm-hmm.
In need of perhaps some better understanding of what was going on with the resident fully, but very caring, because in extended care one deals a lot with the families.
Mm-hmm.
Having to deal with it, so I felt it was good. But the situation which always shocked me was the toilets and the bathing. And the men had this toilet in, this is the old Jean Matheson Pavilion, and there was about four toilets in a row. And the men were just lifted from the bed, and they could be on a mechanical lift on a sling, and they'd all be slung over these toilets side by side. And I felt, oh, there was no privacy.
Yeah.
And I just felt so bad for that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that was the best that the staff could do, there were a few commodes, but really they preferred to use the toilets, and the men did too. And I remember saying, oh no.
Yeah.
But the staff really were caring.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched the new Brock Farney Pavilion being built,
mm-hmm.
and I was there to move into the new Brock Farney Pavilion.
That year would have been about
1983. Okay. Mm-hmm. 1983, yes. And it was so much nicer.
Mm-hmm.
It still had four bed wards. Four bed. We felt four beds was in some ways, it just depended on the situation, but being in a room for the rest of your life with four beds wasn't always the best
mm-hmm.
situation. Some people liked it because they liked the companionship, mm-hmm. and it just depended who your neighbors
exactly.
were.
Exactly.
Right?
They didn't have a lot of choice if they were sometimes.
That's right. So we, and it was easier for the staff having people in four bedrooms.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
However, we advocated for single or semi-private that were designed in such a way, like Surrey Memorial Hospital has some really nice designs in their semi units, so that you weren't just side by side mm-hmm. kind of thing. You almost felt you were in a private unit. So we advocated for that, and when they built, I know in Lines in North Van, when they built the new Kiwanis along Mount Seymour Road, they went into all private.
Uh-huh.
And I had people call me and ask about it, yeah. and so that we advocated for that. For some people it can be a little bit lonely.
Yeah.
But it did give privacy when family were there, and they were encouraged, of course, to come out and join in all the other activities, etc.
So I guess the nurses didn't have too much say in the designing of that.
The nurses didn't have more management was
yeah.
into it, and they did ask for our opinion about it. Now, for the nurses, single rooms are more work because
yeah.
there's longer hallways to
mm-hmm.
walk, etc., and you've got to carry your everything into
mm-hmm.
each single room. But in a way, we felt it was better for the residents. But you know, there's pros and cons of the
fact.
There's one or two still prefer the four bedded room.
And there's always the finances involved.
And the finances. So trying, so I left Shaughnessy and I did a little bit of
work. And did you leave for a specific reason? I don't have to answer if you don't want to.
No, I wasn't so nervous.
But you were the head nurse.
I was the head nurse. I was the head nurse. 75 beds.
Yeah.
My staff, I will tell you, my staff cried when I said I was leaving because I really liked it there. And what we did there also is we encouraged the students to come, and the BC, the bachelor of nursing students came, and that's when I first met Helen Miskell.
Oh yes, UBC.
She brought UBC nurses there, and really enjoyed it. But I felt that in a way, their academic training or whatever was a little better than mine. They got really into the details of the illness and all the rest, and I decided I needed to educate myself a little bit more too. So I decided to leave, and also head nurse position, it was changing. There was talk of changing, getting rid of the head nurses, etc., and going into more management, administrative, out of union, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the politics in the hospital were a bit of a headache.
You're being polite, I think.
I'm being polite. And so I decided I need a break from this for a little while. I need a break. Because we put everything into it, you know, and the staffing, it was getting bad, and that was another thing. I really was concerned about the staffing.
The number of RNs versus the number of
nurse aides, the number of residents one was expected to care for, and these more difficult residents, just very complex care.
Yeah.
And I argued about that, the staffing workload. And so it was a bit of a headache at times, and I loved the staff, and I loved every day I made a round of the residents. So we had 75, but I loved the hands-on.
What was the ratio of RNs to, say, non-RNs for that those 75 patients?
Well, there was one RN for each 25. And the rest were nurse aides. Although in the year before I left, they were updating the aides to become LPNs, and so they were given updating courses, and so they changed it to LPNs, so the gradual movement to LPNs. And so that the LPNs could give some medications, that sort of thing. Now, currently, in 2010, they have updated everybody, and so there's still an RN around. I'm not sure if it's 1 to 25, but there's aides are giving medications, nurse aides, not LPNs.
Really?
They changed back. It's cheaper for nurse aides than LPNs. They changed back from LPNs to aides. And they're giving medications under the certain ones they're allowed to give under the guidance of the RN. The RNs that I've talked to are not all that happy with it at all, but that's how they've gone, because of money. And they've gone away from having head nurses. They are more management, and instead of one head nurse to 75, it's one manager for 150.
They doubled it up.
Yeah. Yes.
That's on more than one floor, though, isn't it?
There's two floors.
And then 75.
In Brockfarney, for example, there were two floors, and there were 75 on each floor. Yes. Anyway, I wanted to make a change and have a rest. And I took a couple of months off, and then I went to work at the assessment unit, geriatric assessment unit, at VGH. And I loved it. I mean, I really wanted to stay there. but I couldn't get a full-time job. It was casual work that I had. I needed a full-time job. And I was sorry about it, but anyway, I went to UBC as a registered nurse, not as a head nurse. I went to, what's it called, at UBC, the extended care unit.
Oh, Purdy Pavilion?
Purdy.
Yes.
And I worked in Purdy.
I didn't know you were there.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, but just I can't remember now how long I worked there. About a year.
Yeah.
And I was an RN on the floor there, but we had to do 12-hour shifts, days and nights.
Mm-hmm.
I was turned 50 there, age 50. And the 12-hour days were all right, but the 12-hour nights were killing me because, again, we had 75 beds.
And that was
That was 1986.
Yeah,
1986. And that was very, very hard because they did not at that time have a continence system. Excuse me. Yeah. And changing all those beds with just linens on them was backbreaking. And there was one RN for 75, and there was two nurse aides. It was the thing I didn't like about that at all was they got residents up about 5 in the morning, maybe 6 in the morning, and sat them all out in their chairs in rows, ready for the day staff coming on. And they sat up in those chairs until they had to have a rest in the afternoon. And it was like a factory.
Oh, yeah.
And I did not like it. I had a friend who actually worked in Purdy as the opening of Purdy, and they developed all these systems, but it was not good at that time. I'm happy to say that it has changed. They have reduced the number of residents on each floor, and they don't do those kind of inhumane things.
Yeah.
Getting the people up at that time in the morning, and it was just all in a row, kind of, and in the hallway and waiting to get into the dining room, and yet there were some very good, caring people there too.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, caring people, I know. But again, the workload issue bothered me.
Yeah.
So. And then I got the position as head nurse at Lionsgate in 1987, and I was there for 10 years.
Yes, you were there for the longest time you were.
Yes, in some place, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I was there for 10 years, and I was very involved in the workload index, as we called it, figuring out the staffing levels. And that became a part of what I did at Lionsgate, really trying to figure out proper staffing levels. I mean, figured it out all in our heads and on paper, but it never really came to much change. But it was just, again, advocating for the residents.
No, at Lionsgate, was that in the
Evergreen House.
Yeah.
And five units there.
Mm-hmm.
Five head nurses there, five units. The two more modern units had, I think they had about 75 as well, mm-hmm. residents, and the one I was on had 58 residents. It was in the older building.
I guess that was quite the usual thing to have great numbers.
Oh,
but
yes,
many,
yes.
There were that many.
75, wow. Yes.
Yeah.
And you had the head nurse, of course, was more clinically involved, although still also involved in administration and meetings and planning and budgeting. And also the staff. Well, for example, in my own unit, I had 58 residents, and I had about 42 staff to give them evaluations every year, etc. was not the easiest to manage. But we had RNs, and again it would be about one RN to 25, and we had nurse aides.
So that didn't change very much.
No, it really didn't.
That was astounding. That was staffed by the government for funding?
Yes, it was partly it was funding, yes. And so therefore, each nurse aide had approximately five or six residents to care for in the mornings. This is morning time. And that's getting people up, etc., feeding, and that was a major, major part of the care, was ensuring that people were fed.
Mm-hmm.
We also did have students come from Vancouver College, I think, for nurse aid students, as well as a few RN students came too. But yes, that was the standard, and then in the evening there would be two RNs for my unit. There was also just two RNs on the other side, which had 75 beds. Maybe 72, I can't just remember. So there would be two RNs on in the evening shift, but there would be about five nurse aides, and they would all just care. They again were assigned to six patients or so.
Mm-hmm.
We called them residents, of course, because they lived there.
Yes.
Right. But it was hard. It's hard work.
Yeah.
And night time, one RN, and essentially just one aide, two aides.
Yes.
To go around again, but we did have a better continence system, and I encouraged the continence system to change at UBC, and it did change eventually.
Oh, good.
Yes, and not maybe on my account, but it did change, much more dignified.
Tell us what that was.
Well, it was, we used the disposable diapers.
Yes.
I think Banfield, for example, which is part of VGH, they may not now use them. They use a material disposable system, not disposable, reusable system of a type of a diaper. And again, I was involved in a study looking at both disposable and non-disposable, and it all came out even. We measured all the cleaning and the garbage and the everything, and they came out even.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever was most comfortable for the residents. However, at Lionsgate we did use a disposable system. And that was much more dignified.
Yeah.
Again, the staff were caring. I think they're special. You know, and the RNs are updating all the time in gerontology.
Mm-hmm.
Encourage them to attend our educational meetings. The BC Gerontological Nurses has monthly educational meetings. And now it developed enough that it went to certification. Now one can be certified in gerontology.
It gives it a little bit more status.
And it gives it more status.
Exactly.
Yes.
Did you find that the attitude was beginning to change, that gerontology was looking at more of a specialty? And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was changing and being recognized as a specialty, just the same as the OR nurses or acute care nurses who specialized in some area of care.
Yes.
It definitely has changed, and there's a large group, I think, of gerontological nurses who now have their certification. And there was more, well, there was education at both at Shaughnessy and Lionsgate. There was always an educator there, but mainly to help the, I think at Shaughnessy, to help the aides cope with what they were doing. And now at Lionsgate, the RNs are much involved as well now to update their knowledge of gerontology.
Yes, because now for re-registration, you know, they have to have
so many credits.
Yeah, so this
has helped,
right? Probably, hasn't it?
It has helped.
Yes.
It has helped, yes. Yes, so I'm on and on about gerontology,
no,
but that was my life.
So you remained a head nurse on this area.
I remained for those 10 years.
Yeah.
Yes, and then I retired and decided I wanted to look after my grandchildren and do some traveling.
Yes.
And I was able to look after my grandchildren, which was wonderful. And they were small. Yes. Yes.
So how many grandchildren do you have now?
Well, between the two of us, we have eight. But I have three children, and I have four grandchildren, and two of them are very special because I looked after them just because of where they lived.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to look after them when they were babies,
mm-hmm.
and see them growing up. They're now 14 and 11, and so it's just a wonderful
mm-hmm.
experience.
Mm-hmm. Have you continued? Well, I should just mention as well that you did get an RNABC Award of Excellence in Nursing Practice for your work. And I think that was an honor well deserved from what you've been telling me. Must have been quite a moment for you.
That was an exciting moment, yes. And as I said, it was earlier, it was one of the other head nurses at Lionsgate in Evergreen House who suggested in 1989 or around then that I should be nominated for an award of excellence. And I'm not sure if they had just started those awards of excellence.
They started a couple of years before that.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so because of my work in the gerontological nurses group, because of perhaps my work with the residents, I'm not sure why, just because of me maybe. So I was honoured in 1989 to mm-hmm. receive the Award of Excellence mm-hmm. in Nursing Practice. It was an honour, and in order to have that honour, there had to be five letters or mm-hmm. something like that. And one came from Helen Niskala as the professor mm-hmm. UBC. Mm-hmm. One came from the physician at Dr. John Sloan at Brock Farn, mm-hmm. because the doctors came in there and worked, and he is quite involved in geriatrics, although he's retiring now. Mm-hmm. His bedside manner was terrible, but he was clinically very, very well educated, mm-hmm. and he really did care about the older people, but his manner to the nurses was not good, difficult to deal with. So I often had to intervene and help the nurses out. But he wrote a book about gerontological medicine.
He obviously recognized your words, though.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, he did. He wrote a book for general practitioners dealing with older people.
Okay.
And he signed the book for me, saying that everything he learned about it was from me.
Oh,
so that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that was in from Brock Farney, Dr. John Sloan, and Helen Niskala. They were essentially both from Brock Farney.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at, and only for about six, I'm not sure, maybe it was nearly a year, Dr. Martha Donnelly worked at VGH and at the STAT Center mm-hmm. where I worked, and I said I would have loved to have mm-hmm. stayed. In that short time, she got to know me and she wrote about my care. Perhaps maybe because one of the gentlemen that we had in the unit, in going back to Shaughnessy, mm-hmm. I had nursed, or my staff had nursed, and I knew the wife. The wife was admitted to VGH mm-hmm. STAT Centre, mm-hmm. and the staff were having difficulty knowing how to manage her. And I was on night duty that night, and I came on. Dr. Martha Donnelly was there, and I recognised the lady right away. Well, her head cleared, it seems, when she saw me, because we had known each other mm-hmm. so long, mm-hmm. visiting the husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was that, partly that Dr. Martha Donnelly based her judgment mm-hmm. on. because I monitored her through the evening and she became okay. She still needed care, but we would set up the dining room in there. It's a little bit drab, or it was, and she and I would find little tablecloths during the daytime and set it up nicely, the same as we used to do in another in the unit at Shauna.
Oh, yes.
That brought Farnie.
That brought back some memories.
And it brought back memories for her, and she seemed to help her.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think she sort of based it a bit on that.
And some other things, I'm sure.
I'm sure there must have been some other things.
That's very nice.
That I was doing. Yeah. So, and, well, that's all I can remember. At least there were three letters through it. And, and so I was very proud, of course, of that. And at that was 1989. I received it, and it was an honour to go in to, you know, RNABC at that time, and they had a dinner, and in fact, I was flying out that evening. I couldn't even stay for the dinner because I was going to Toronto to the Canadian Gerontological Nurses Conference in Toronto. So that was a special time.
Yeah. Now, when you you mentioned Jesse Mantle, were there any other people that you can recall as being rather influential in your career or that sort of influenced you? You mentioned Jesse earlier.
Well, Jesse, yes. Jesse definitely was someone who did, and in fact, I think there are maybe almost too many names to mention that I wouldn't like to miss anyone out, but Jesse was definitely up there. My colleagues that I worked with, and I saw how they worked and what they were doing too, and their struggles in trying to create a better image for gerontological nursing. Caroline Rooney, who was another head nurse I worked with, and the educator Elaine Kidd, who worked at Evergreen House. She also inspired me in her her knowledge and the way that she helped RNs develop their skills, develop their knowledge. She definitely helped me, and I think maybe some of my readings that I did. I got very interested in. In fact, am I taking too long?
I read.
I think I read through textbooks.
Yes.
To improve my knowledge, and from those textbooks, I really, really found a lot of knowledge in there. And now my mind has gone. I was just trying to remember the author, who is also a member of our BC Nursing History Group. Oh, you know her. I just can't get it. Yes.
Okay.
Beverly Dugan.
Beverly Dugan.
Yeah.
She's written books.
Yes. So I nursed her father.
Oh, did you?
In Jean Matheson Pavilion.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And so she, her books, you know, really inspired me. And so I read all the textbooks I could get hold of. Some of the old ones as well. Geriatrics, I found I still have an old library book from Shaughnessy Hospital on geriatrics. So that was partly how I educated myself, and I took some courses, but educated it that way. So reading books, and it inspired me. And when I went to the conference, I think the one in Toronto, just after my award, I picked up the book, The Finest Art, Nursing, The Finest Art, and I had, doing some studies at Simon Fraser, I wrote all about Florence Nightingale.
You do?
Yes.
I think we should tell people that you have just finished taking a French course. Did you take, I mean, on retirement, You did other things, didn't you?
On retirement, yes. I did. I decided my three children had all gone through university. Mm-hmm. I had not done the degree. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the problems, I think, at VGH in maybe wanting to stay on there was one, if I wanted to do a head nurse position, mm-hmm. for example, had to have a degree. Mm-hmm. And they would not look at anyone without a degree. Mm-hmm. Whereas Lionsgate Hospital were prepared to take me from my experience mm-hmm. without the degree. But I know it has all gone into degrees now, and I welcome that academic challenge mm-hmm. because I think it is much more complex now in a way. The basic nursing mm-hmm. remains the same, mm-hmm. but so anyway, I decided when I retired I'd like to get a degree, and I started off planning to have a Bachelor of Arts, and I have now very slowly managed to obtain 96 credits, and I need 120.
You're getting there, aren't you?
Yes. And I threw out it, and it was very good. Simon Fraser, unfortunately, UBC was not open to me. I'm not quite sure. I didn't think my academic background was enough. They were not very open to someone my age going in there. Simon Fraser was very open, and so was Victoria.
Ah.
UBC at the time was not open. I think they have changed.
Yeah.
They have changed. So I thought Victoria, but then I went to Simon Fraser University, and so I've done slowly all those courses, a variety of courses.
What have you taken?
Oh, I've taken anthropology, psychology, physiology, kinesiology, humanities. Really, it's been marvelous because I changed in the last year or so to do a Bachelor of General Studies. So I could then, I didn't need to major in anything. Mm-hmm. As long as I got the higher level courses, I could choose anything.
Mm.
And English, of course, I liked very much literature and English. So I have broadened my mind.
Really have.
And as I said, one of them was about wasn't nursing per se, but it was a feminist mm-hmm. course
mm-hmm.
about was I think the title of my essay was to do with Florence Nightingale being a feminist and some of her ideas mm-hmm. on women's education mm-hmm. etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote an essay on that. And I used some of the material from the Nursing the Finest Art,
yes.
That lovely book.
Yes.
So it's been interesting. So my latest course, I stopped for a couple of years because my husband was ill, mm-hmm. and I thought I wouldn't go back. One of the reasons being that one has to pay now. They used to have the seniors could go for free, tuition, and now they have changed it, and it's very expensive. And I decided to go back, and I took a French course, and I'm just waiting for my mark.
Oh,
I think I've done quite well.
Good.
All my grandchildren are all in French immersion.
Oh, so they can help you.
Yes.
Because I was wondering why you chose
that. That was the reason I chose it. Yes. And also, it was down at Harbour Centre.
Yes.
And Harbour Centre is, yes.
That's not too, it's not very convenient for you.
It's convenient rather than going up to Burnaby up onto the hill. One humanities professor, I remember him saying, "Now, why did you choose this course?" And it was about pilgrimage. It was a very interesting course about pilgrimage. And he was a retired Anglican minister. Mm-hmm. But a professor also at Simon Fraser, he asked the class, "Why did you choose this course? And don't tell me it's on a Wednesday, it's at Harbour Centre, and I get 4 credits."
That's another reason.
So I've really, really enjoyed that.
So what are you taking next? You got it?
Well, I've got to take a break because we're moving in the summer, and I'm hoping to take history.
Oh, Okay.
I've taken a little bit of history, mm-hmm. and this one is history and of the Commonwealth, of British history. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I'd like to take that mm-hmm. in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, when you think back in your particularly your nursing career, were there any experiences that you found most sort of enjoyable and satisfying, or more than one than the other, or whether your time at Lionsgate was that better experience for you, or I don't know if I'm using the word better, but satisfying?
Yes, I know what you mean. Yes. Lionsgate was very satisfying because of their whole philosophy, mm-hmm. I felt, in making the lives of the residents there as comfortable, as, just full of decent quality of life, mm-hmm. Improving the quality mm-hmm. of life, mm-hmm. not looking at it as the end stage and nothing can be done, and just looking at the quality of life. And so, and they do that in all the units now, extended cares, etc. I know they do. But I worked with a very good rehab assistant, mm-hmm. and her name was Cindy, same as the young lady at Brock Farney the other day,
yeah.
And we would arrange teas, and we both came up with ideas of how to improve the quality for the residents, involve them in their care, you know, and having the residents council, and but I know that they do that in other places, mm-hmm. but it satisfied me in seeing that help, mm-hmm. and looking at the person as a whole, and mm-hmm. understanding them. And I, as a head nurse, that's one of the nice things I liked about it, that I could do things that I possibly couldn't do as an RN,
yeah.
because I'm too busy doing my work,
yeah.
the hands-on care. I arranged an art show with my rehab assistant, with Cindy, and we collected some paintings, some things that the residents had done in their younger lives, and brought them all in and set them all up as a little art show.
Mm.
And it was wonderful. Mm. That was very, very satisfying. One man who'd had several strokes, he couldn't speak properly, but he had been a photographer, and he used to set himself up, dressed up as an old tramp or dressed up somewhere else, and he would take all these photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that, and so his wife brought in all these framed photographs mm-hmm. that he had done. That was one instance. And when people came, I invited people from the hospital, when they came to visit our little art show, he spoke clearly about each painting.
Right.
And, you know, that was mm-hmm. really, really interesting. I was interested in learning more about speech and how one loses speech,
yeah.
etc.
What triggered that?
Yeah. And so his wife was just, she was so happy
yeah.
because he was able to speak to each of those paintings. Yeah. And then after it was finished, he could hardly speak again to
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. So I could do things like that
yeah.
as a head nurse, arrange mm-hmm. this, you know, take the time in the afternoon and set up somebody's. An old lady who you would think didn't do anything, you know, and there she was. She'd been a wonderful artist and brought in some of her paintings, and someone else who had been a wonderful baker, we arranged a little tea, and she baked everything for the rest.
Really?
I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So I could do little things
yeah.
like that
mm-hmm.
and encourage the staff to look at the person as a whole.
Yeah, well, not about their history. What did they do there when they were well, and what talent did they have, and
yeah.
what their life before all of this. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It really makes them see the person as a whole.
Yeah.
And another thing was in even in Brock Farney was to put a, bring his family to bring in some pictures. They do that nowadays, of when they were younger. Mm-hmm. What they did. This is a, he was a school principal, you know, and this is what he did.
Because people have to talk about when they're there.
That's right.
Staff can recognize that there is something they can talk about.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, I found those things. And helping the families understand what was going on, I think, was very important, and helping them to feel comfortable at death.
Yeah, because that's inevitable in a
situation. Oh, like absolutely. So many deaths.
Yeah.
And, some people feel, oh, I couldn't like to work in there because everybody's dying all the time, but it was part of life and part of that, and helping the families deal with life, I'm very satisfied.
Yes. Right. We're so lucky to have you. Is there anything that you'd like to add that we have missed today? I mean, it's been wonderful hearing you talk about your gerontological experiences and, you know, your whole philosophy about care.
Well, I don't think I have anything to add, except that I was very fortunate to go to the library in Lardner for a presentation of a book written by Sheila, well, partly written by Sheila Zare, presenting it about the history of a nurse back in, you know, Victoria. They collected all her notes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I think I was very fortunate to meet her and become involved in the BC history of nursing. Yeah. That was how I became involved in that.
We're very glad that you did join our group.
And I'm finding it interesting, more interesting each year, really.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nat, for this opportunity to interview you. I really appreciate it. I'm sure that the CD will be in the library, and nurses can sign it out just like a book.
All right.
I wish to listen to it.
All right.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.